is Renee with Vaccine Information Coalition, and you're listening to Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. This is our weekly radio show, which is on every Monday at 2 p.m. I'm a co-host with my husband, Gary Tunsky, and he is the author of the book, The Battle for Health is Over PH, and is writing another book, which is the name of our show, titled What in the Cell is Going On? Gary is very anointed to explain the damage vaccines cause to our cells and the simplicity of our body's innate ability to heal on its own.
Thank you, Renee. That was a lovely greeting. For those of you who don't know who I am, my name is Gary Tunsky. And for the last 20 years or so, I've been a health minister in the field of cytopathy. And if somebody doesn't know what cytopathy is, it's cyto meaning cell and pathy meaning pathology of the cell. And what they're missing in med school is the study of cytopathy. And their actually training is in cytology, which is the parts list. And the reason why there's no answers in medical science for cures, or so-called, that they say there are, is because they're looking in the wrong direction as far as the science of the parts of the cell versus how the cell runs. Analogy would be asking a mechanic what runs the engine of your car, and the mechanic says, well, it's the pistons. And you ask another mechanic, no, it's the valves. And you ask another mechanic, no, it's the muffler. And you ask another mechanic, no, it's the carburetor. And they're all right, but they're all wrong. There's many parts to an engine, just like there's many parts to a cell. And as everyone knows, as far as listeners are concerned, that the human body is made of cells. Cells make up all the constituents as a matrix, if you will, or the foundation of the body. Heart cells are made by the heart. Heart is built by heart cells. The blood is built by blood cells. The liver is built by liver cells. And the kidneys are built by kidney cells. The brain is built by brain cells. And the immune system is even all cellular. Lymphocytes and leukocytes and monocytes and all the ites of the cell. And there's 243 different types of cells. And each type has a certain job to do, or synthesis of certain hormones or neurotransmitters or neuropeptides or even energy ATP production, as long as the cell is healthy. So a healthy cell in the body will gather healthy tissues. The healthy tissues will form healthy organs. The healthy organs form healthy systems, like the immune system or the dopaminergic system in the brain or the endocrine system or the neurological systems. And there's 12 of them, just like the 12 apostles. And then there's 12 systems that represent the human body. What they don't understand in med school and academia, if you will, is the three parts behind the cell that actually make up the invisible structures to the cell, such as the subatomic, sub meaning below, atom meaning atomic or atoms. So below atom is the smallest living element. And they're actually creating these particle accelerators that are about 20 miles long that actually collide particles together. They swing one to the right and swing another particle to the left, atoms. And when they smash together and collide, there's a smaller particle that is a representative of the collision. And they name that tachyons and muons and neutrinos and Higgs boson. So as far as science is concerned, they're trying to find the smallest particle, the God particle, that represents the smallest atom or smallest structure to the physical Earth. So they're spending billions of dollars on these projects, and they're never going to find anything as a particle, because it'll keep cracking and cracking and cracking to the invisible, what I call wavicles, or there's particle and waves that are combinations that are unseen by the human eye. In fact, microscopes can't even pick them up. So if you understand the cell and it's all cellular foundation of illness, then all illness would have to be a cell malfunction somehow, some way. And that's what people ask me all the time, Gary, how did you figure out the theory of the one disease repackaged 40,000 different ways? Because as you know, medical science will tell you there's 40,000 different diseases demanding 40,000 different treatments and 40,000 different pharmaceutical regimens. What I would say is that there's one disease condition from head to toe, but the cells malfunctioning in that area is the one disease. So I'll give an example. When massive amounts of cells malfunction, and we're going to get into really the culprit that really causes these cells to malfunction, the main ones, and then what you add to it will cause the cell malfunction to increase and become very, very virulent as far as the functioning of the organ systems. So massive amounts of cells in the joints, when they malfunction, you're going to have pain and inflammation in the joint. And arthritis would be the actual term that medical science would give for that. The same poisons and carcinogens, and we're going to find out what those are, the acids and the toxins involved in causing these cells to malfunction. If they end up in the heart, then the cardiac, what's called myocytes in the heart, will malfunction and give off arrhythmias or murmurs or palpitations as a symptom. And that term would be cardiomyopathy or cardiovascular disease. Now, to me, arthritic conditions and cardiomyopathy are the same disease, cell malfunction and cell malfunction. The only difference is the cell malfunction of the synovial fluid producing cells in the joint or the bursa fluid producing cells, and the cellular malfunction in the heart is a cardiomyocyte malfunction. They're both cell malfunctions, but they're different regions of the weak link in the chain of organs, the path of least resistance. So wherever your weak link is and your path of least resistance, and that's where your genetic predisposition comes from, and that would be set up by the vaccines. And Renee did a great job last week introducing our episode of what in the cell is going on, because everything's cellular. And she went over a great job as far as showing the abuse of the vaccines. And number one, number two is the cause and effect of vaccines and the conflicts of interest, and that they're not safe and they're not effective. And then she went into why that is. So the biggest culprit on this planet, and this includes radiation, this includes heavy metals, carcinogens, the biggest culprit to throwing a monkey wrench in the cellular engines of the body, or a factor of throwing a poison inside the cell and damaging the molecular machines of the cell, would be the vaccinations. And why? Because number one, the heavy metals that are used as adjuvants. And number two is the retroviruses and the bacterial forms that are actually foreign antigen coming from the animals that they're using to attenuate the vaccines. So as we mentioned last week, when you crossbreed or run a hybrid recombinant from half animal and half human, you're getting half monkey, which they're using the rhesus monkey tissues, the kidneys. They're using diphtheria culturing as from horse blood. And they're using the human diploid tissues or embryonic tissues. And these are sick tissues. They're not healthy. And when you recombine an animal with a human, you're getting a cross DNA or a foreign DNA. And when you inject that in the bloodstream of a human and you bypass the nose and the mouth, then you're getting a direct hit to the bloodstream with no protection. So you're creating a red alert to the immune system. And that blood has to get rid of this foreign DNA. And it can't vomit. The blood can't regurgitate. It can't sweat. Like the stomach can regurgitate, or you can have diarrhea and flush it out that way, whereas the blood has no elimination capabilities. So that's the biggest danger, is what you inject in the blood that is extremely carcinogenic and extremely toxic, and that would be the toxic adjuvants. As Renee mentioned last week, you have aluminum, you have mercury, you have formaldehyde, formalin, MSG, sodium benzoate, polysorbate 60, and these adjuvants are used to kind of ramp up the vaccines to the point where the vaccines are going to stimulate an antibody production. And so medical science, in a deceiving way, will teach the MDs in med school that increased antibody titers are increased immunity. And that has nothing to do with boosting the immune system. It'd be like you saying you go into an elevator, and so let's say someone has mononucleosis in the elevator, and you walk in with somebody else, a friend of yours, the door shuts. The guy with mono sneezes on you and sneezes on your friend. Equal exposure to the mononucleosis. You both go to the hospital and get a titer pulled from your blood. And both of you will have high antibody titers to the mononucleosis that was sneezed on you. But it doesn't mean that you're going to get it. So one gets the mono and the other one doesn't. Now, if it was germ theory, or if there's a theory of increased antibody titers, both of you would both got mononucleosis because of equal exposure to the sneeze. That's not the case. So it's always the inner condition of you at cellular terrain, cellular level, upon exposure to the germ, whether it's bacteria, whether it's virus, whether it's fungal, whether it's a parasite, whether it's a prion or a stealth virus or whatever that pathogen is, including Lyme, as virulent even as Ebola is. I'm not saying to do this, but even HIV, if you had a sexual intercourse in the third world country with a prostitute that's carrying HIV, and you don't get the AIDS, which a lot of time that happens to third world countries where the businessmen fly in to these prostitutes, well, not everyone get AIDS. So if germ theory is true, then everyone would have AIDS on exposure to AIDS or HIV. Same thing with virulent pathogens like Lyme disease and SARS, and you have your Borrelia. Also, you have your prions and your stealth viruses. They only can take hold when the cellular environment is very toxic. Sugar is laying around, which is a food source for these pathogens. The pH is very acidic. The low oxygen levels to the body is called hypoxia. The low immunity at the cell level, and a stagnant blood flow and stagnant lymphatic flow. If that's the case of the cellular environment, then these pathogens do take hold and they cause infection. So when you see an infection to the lung, you know that your lungs are not healthy, number one. Number two is the pH is acidic, so you're running acidic beverages and acidic foods, which set up a shop for what's called acidosis. Your immune system's compromised at that time. Your nutritional status is low, and you have vitamin status and minerals and enzymes and antioxidants. So when the terrain is that weakened and compromised, they are going to invite these pathogens in as scavengers. They're opportunistic. They're not the cause of, they're because of. So that little B change between because and cause is a major factor in whether these germs or these bacterial forms or viruses take hold or not. So as far as disease is concerned, the same thing happens. When you ingest or inject vaccines in the blood, these foreign DNA fragments, they enter the bloodstream and they try to get dumped, and they will seek a weak link in the chain of organs, the path of least resistance, and they'll snip out your chromosome, your DNA, and just like a scissors, and insert itself. So now you got a replacement of half monkey, half human, or half horse blood, or half diphtheria tissue, and half human into your DNA or chromosome factors. And who knows what's going to happen at that point. When they insert themselves, it's not an instant disease. Sometimes it takes 5 years, sometimes it takes 10 years, sometimes it takes 15, 20 years to incubate into a full-blown crisis like cancer. They're finding monkey viruses in the cancer tumors now, and the carcinogens that they're measuring in the tumors also coming from the environment add to that. So the main culprit is the vaccination setting up shop for your weakest link. And then what you eat, drink, and breathe and bathe and put on your skin and rub in your scalp, put on your skin as far as shampoos and conditioners, hairsprays, when with their makeup and also their skin creams and their toxic hairsprays and so forth, add to that carcinogenic level. So the vaccines are the culprit of setting up shop, but then the thousands and thousands of chemicals coming in, and they say these are low dose as far as GRAS, and GRAS means generally recognized as safe. You could run a GRAS for a mercury and it might be only 25 microgram for safety to a human. Then you run aluminum studies and you might find that to be 25 microgram safety. But since when does any human being ever exposed to 1, 2, 3, or 4 different foreign antigens? There's always thousands coming in. So you, let's see the case studies and your GRAS scientific studies of safety measures. When you combine a little bit of mercury, a little bit of aluminum, a little bit of cadmium, a little bit of lead, a little bit of BHT and sodium benzoate, and yellow number 5, diazin, caramel coloring, and phosphoric acid, and on it goes. And these thousands coming in through the nose and the mouth through chewing and swallowing, all end up in the bloodstream and they mix. So now you get a compounding toxicity, not just the individual toxin coming in through the skin or the mouth or the nose. So when you combine thousands together and they're compounding toxicities, then they coat the cell that's weak. So wherever your weakest link is in your chain of organs, your path of least resistance, is where the bloodstream will dump these poisons and carcinogens and acids and keep the blood clean, because the blood body's saying, hey, I cannot deal with these carcinogens and acids and heavy metals and carcinogens in my blood, because that's my life force. So I have to clear my bloodstream to keep you alive. So as a survival mechanism, it will choose to dump these carcinogens and acids and heavy metals and these poisons into an area that's weak. And this is interesting, that the body will never dump these contaminants or these carcinogens or acids in a vital organ like the heart or the brain or the lungs immediately. It will always pick an outer extremity like the nose or the toes and the ankles and the knees, the back of the knees, the popliteal. It'll pick the elbows. It'll pick the wrists. It'll pick the fingers as a storage bin to clear the bloodstream. That is where you get your terms called gout. And gout is uric acid crystals entering into the toe as a clearance from the blood. And when they enter into the toe, you get a broken glass type effect when you're walking. And while you're walking back and forth with the uric acid crystals in the toe, they rub together and they create a swelling or an inflammation in the toe and muscle tissue. And that's your extreme pain that you're going to feel. Well, the medical community or allopathic medicine, when they train the MDs in academia, they're saying that the pain and inflammation is the disease of gout. I would say it's a cell malfunction in the toe or the muscles and the nerves manifesting the pain and inflammation. So there's two different perspectives here. I want the audience to see another perspective, another theory, if you will, of disease epidemiology, where there's no such thing as 40,000 different diseases demanding 40,000 different treatments. There's one disease condition manifesting 40,000 different ways depending on what cells are malfunctioning. Now, the symptoms are different, but it's the same carcinogens, it's the same heavy metals, it's the same sugar and white flour and paint fumes and epoxy resins and asbestos and on that are dumped from the bloodstream to clear the blood into the fingers, and that term is going to be called rheumatoid arthritis. If the wrists are the target of your weak link, that's going to be called carpal tunnel syndrome. If the elbows are your target or weak link in the chain of organs from these carcinogens entering into the elbows, then you're going to get a storage bin where it's going to cause pain and inflammation called arthritis. Arth meaning joint and itis meaning inflammation. So now the scams of medical science, and I'm going to say they are scams because they know better, and you're going to know better when I tell you this, that there's no such thing as the difference between colitis and arthritis and dermatitis and encephalitis and nephritis and hepatitis and colitis and all the itises. They're all the same disease. Now, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that I'm telling the truth, that it's one inflammatory disease condition with an itis at the end, meaning inflammation of, and the front, the prefix of the terms that they use as what's called so-called disease labels, the techno-jargon doctrinese language they use, is the prefix of the organ that's inflamed. That's the only difference. So carditis is cardiac tissue inflammation. Nephritis is neph is kidney. That's a kidney tissue inflammation. Same disease, two different angle, two different body parts, but inflammation of both. When you hear the word encephalitis, that's brain tissue inflammation. When you hear the word dermatitis, that's skin inflammation. You have seven layers that can be inflamed. When you hear the word otitis media, that's a middle ear inflammation. When you hear the word colitis, that's colon, or epithelial tissue or mucosal lining that inflames, causing inflammation. So they make you believe, and the whole world believe, that there's 130 different itises, and they're all the same, and they're trained, and they're actually treated the same way systemically to kick in that self-healing doctor. to deal with the itises. The same thing you can carry over into cancer. All the cancers are the same. There's no such thing as melanoma, different than carcinoma, different than lymphoma, different than blastoma, different than myoma, different than sarcoma. The difference is that where the tumor is formed. So when the tumor is formed, and I'm going to get into this in later shows, the tumor is not even the cancer. It's a side effect of cancer process. So the tumor forms as a cocoon, a bubble, an intelligent system to keep you alive so it doesn't metastasize. So that tumor formation or cocoon or bubble that the body grows, it's called a fibrinogen protein wrap. The wrap that's around the mutated cancer cells and the infection, dried blood and mucus and so forth, encapsulates the cancer cells so it doesn't spill and metastasize and spread. But they think that that cocoon or that bubble, that tumor, is the cancer. It's not. So they're chasing the wrong direction. First of all, tumor removal strategies in cancer or oncology will never cure cancer because they're treating the symptom. So they can drug, cut, burn, and poison all they want to as far as looking at the cocoon as a cancer when you still have cancer, even if you remove the cocoon or the bubble. You're still toxic, and you're more toxic than what you started with because of the chemotherapy and radiation and pharmaceuticals. You're more acidic than what you started with. An acid pH, everyone knows in oncology, would allow a tumor to grow. So everything they use is acidic to the point where it will burn a hole through your shoe. Chemotherapy is so extremely toxic and caustic at burning that the oncology nurses and the oncologists that deliver this has full mop gear on. They have rubber gloves, they have masks, they have rubber shoes. They run behind a lead wall before they hit the switch on you with the radiation. And the poor patient has a nightgown on from the hospital, wide open with cancer-causing radiation to their bloodstream. So they're doing more to cause cancer than reverse cancer. So even in oncology, they're trained to support the drug companies with profits of chemotherapy and radiation. That's why they can't tell them the truth that the cocoon, the bubble, or the tumor is a side effect of cancer. So cancer and the tumor formation are separate entities. They're not one and the same like they think it is. So that's one misnomer or a myth and fable of medicine. Another myth and fable would be dealing with studying the dead to understand the living. You study life to study life and longevity and health. You don't study the dead. So they study a dead, lifeless cadaver to figure out life, longevity, and health. That don't even make sense. But it makes sense to them because there's big money in pathogens that are stained and dead. And they can't see the pleomorphic changes. So that's why they think germs cause disease, because Louis Pasteur has been bought and paid for by Rockefeller and Rothschild. The medical, military, and industrial complex has actually paid off Louis Pasteur to speak on the germ theory to favor antibiotics, to favor antivirals, to favor antifungals for medical. So the allopathic side of big pharma has paid off a spokesman for the germ theory, and they crushed a brilliant scientist. His name is Antoine Bichon, who is a microbiologist, an MD, PhD. He's got more degrees than a thermometer behind his name. And he's the one that had the true research on germ theory way back in 1902. Actually, he did his studies in Germany in 1860, all the way to, I think, 1918. And he even had Pasteur on his side, by his side in the laboratories. He actually pulled Pasteur aside and said, "Hey, Louis, come over here. I'm going to show you something." He took out a Petri dish, and inside the Petri dish, he dropped a virulent bacteria, but then he dropped a nutritional medium that was perfect. He dropped perfect oxygen level. The pH was perfect. And the whole dish environment was perfectly healthy, and he shut the lid. He waited about 3 or 4 hours. He opened up the lid, and he says, "Louis, come here. I'm going to show you something." They zoomed in on their light microscopes, so they're able to see the live blood stain of the live Petri dish. And when they zoomed in on the pathogen, on the germ that they placed inside, they found no change, none. It just sat there and laying dormant and non-virulent. But as soon as they opened the dish lid, and oxygen got in and oxidized the dish, and the oxygen dissipated and the pH becomes acidic, and the nutritional status started just dissipating, and the dish became morbid. Then they zoomed in on the microscope again, and they found 16 cycles of changes between bacteria flipping to virus, virus to spore, spore to mold, mold to fungus, and then eventually the morbidity of the dish allowed virulent strains to start collecting in the dish, where they become lethal at that point. So again, an example of a cellular terrain of you upon exposure, because you're the petri dish, whether you're allowing a germ or a bacteria or virus to take hold, or whether you have a symbiotic relationship with that particular pathogen. If pathogens or germs caused illness, everyone on this radio show would be dead or be sick. And that's not the case. So if germs really cause disease, like they say it does, then why is everyone at least functioning, at least somewhat healthy? I mean, a lot of you probably are on pharmaceuticals as a support for your disease process, but you're not dead and you're not in a wheelchair. So germs can only take hold in a morbidity environment where the cellular terrain is stagnant blood or stagnant lymphatics from not exercising. The pH is acidic and not alkaline, running about 6.5. There's sugar laying around, which is a food source for the pathogens. The immune system is compromised. The virulency of the bacteria and the viruses and the spores, they get stronger, and the morbidity gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So it's always a cellular environment allowing the bacteria and the viruses to take hold as infection, or it keeps them in check symbiotically with you. And that's why there's trillions of them in your arm, they're in your blood, they're in your colon, they're behind your eye, they're on your fingers. So if germs cause disease, everyone would be at least sick and most people dead. Prove my point. Now, again, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that looking in nature, it'll show you the truth behind virulency of the germs. You have a stagnant swamp. In the stagnation, you're going to see dead trees and flowers in the background, number one. Number two, you're going to see algae and fungus and mold growing on the top of the water. Number three, you're going to see mosquitoes and flies flying everywhere. Now, they come in secondary. They're not primary. They're not the cause of the stagnant swamp. They're because of the stagnant swamp. So the pathogens or the virulency of the germs or fungus or molds are analogous of the fungus and mold that grow in you. So the fungus and mold and bacteria and virus that grow inside of you in your lungs is pneumonia or Helicobacter pylori in your upper gastric region are always due to dirty colon or dirty lung tissue, acidity in the tissue, compromised immune system, nutritional status is in the dirt, low oxygen levels. So the factors of the cellular terrain weakening is what allows these germs to take hold. Now, you're never going to see mosquitoes and flies. You're never going to see mold and fungus and algae growing on the top of the water of the river. So in a flowing river where it's vibrant, you're going to see bright flowers and bright trees in the background. You're going to see smell and no stagnation when the water's moving. You're going to see no mosquitoes and flies. If you do see them, it'd be on the outskirts of the river. Whereas in the stagnant swamp, you'd see them everywhere. So the solution to an MD at that point would be to come in and spray the pesticides and spray the insecticides to kill off the germs or to kill off the bacteria and virus or the mold and fungus. They would use like an anti-mold or antifungal compounds to kill off the pathogens. But what are they doing for the stagnant swamp is my question. So they leave the stagnation in play and they leave for about a week and they come back a week later and then there's more virulency and there's more mosquitoes and flies. There's stronger fungus and mold on the top of the waters because they never clean the swamp. They still see dead trees and flowers. You can even correlate that to a dirty kitchen. Dishes in the sink, breadcrumbs on the floor, and honey on the counter. You'll see cockroaches and ants everywhere. Now, was the cockroaches and ants that caused the dirty dishes in the sink and the breadcrumbs on the floor? Or was it the dirty dishes in the sink, the breadcrumbs and the honey that drew in the mosquitoes and flies? Or the cockroaches and ants? And everyone knows the cockroaches and ants are secondary. They're not primary. They're because of the dirty kitchen, not the cause of the dirty kitchen. So I'm just proving my point, even in nature, parallel with the human being, what causes illness. So they're going to say, and I apologize to the audience of the confusion, and I want to give an island of clarity in the sea of confusion here. One so-called expert saying, oh, it's toxins that are causing illness. And then another one is saying, no, you're just low on water. It's dehydration that's causing your illness. And you get another one saying, no, it's lack of growth hormones. That's a factor of kicking up your immune system and the growth factor of getting your energy working with testosterone. And another so-called expert is going to say your acid pH is what's causing illness, or your infection is causing illness. The answer to that is it's not infection, it's not nutritional deficiencies, it's not acid pH, it's not low growth hormones, testosterone, it's all of it. So what we need to do is look at the synchronized factors of what causes illness at the cell level. And everyone asked me too, how did you figure this out? And how I figured out it's only one disease repackaged and everything cellular and cells malfunctioning are the one disease. If you look at medical science, you study molecular biology, you're going to find out that the molecular structure to the cell is a huge factor in how the cell runs. So the field of molecular biology will point to the cell. If you study cellular physiology, you're going to find out that the physiology of the cell functioning is a study of cellular physiology, the study of the cell. If you study microbiology, that's going to point to the environment of the cell, which you talked about with the mosquitoes and flies and the stagnation and the germs and viruses and fungus as an environment to the cell. If you study clinical ecology, that's allergic reactions to the cell. If you study nutritional biochemistry, you're going to see the building blocks to the cell, like your proteins, your vitamins, your minerals, your enzymes, and how they make they create a makeup of the molecular machines inside the cell, and the cell membrane, and the DNA, and the Golgi complex, and the centrioles, and the mitochondria are all built on amino acids. They're all built on vitamin cofactors. They're built on water molecule, oxygen molecule, and to prove my point that drugs can't work, and I'm going to get into a show there. We're a whole hour going to talk about why pharmaceutical chemistry cannot work in a human biological machine. Impossible. The chemistry is wrong. It's like running your car on diesel fuel, and it runs on unleaded. Well, it's going to putt down the street. The reason why people are putting down the street, they can't think, they can't concentrate, they have no energy, they always take naps throughout the day, is they're putting down the street because they're using wrong chemistry to the cells. So the cellular structures have to be ingested with things that they're made of. Let me make it real simple. A cell is made of water. So every cell, all 100 trillion of them, need hydration. So that's one spoke of the wheel. That's a necessity of hydration to the cell. Otherwise, the cell, the dry land of the cell, they can't run. Number two, an acid pH would make a cell malfunction. So then an alkaline pH would make a cell function to an optimum level of 12 cellular capacity. So every cell in the body needs a certain pH range to function properly. So that's number two. Number three would be nutritional deficiencies. That would make a cell malfunction. So not having enough amino acids, not having enough vitamins. You need 16 vitamins a day. You need 72 minerals a day. You need enzymes as a catalyst to make the vitamins and minerals work. You need antioxidants or phytonutrients, and phyto meaning from plant. And those phytonutrients or antioxidants are prooxidants, they're not antioxidants. So you have to use probiotics, not antibiotics. And the word anti, to take two steps backward, they're telling you that they're going against you and your own self-healing systems by the names of the drugs. Every drug name is either an anti or it's a blocker, a beta blocker, a calcium blocker, a channel blocker, either an anti-inflammatory, an antibiotic, bio meaning life, so they're going against life, anti-cholinergic, anti-hypertensive, and anti-psychotic. So the word anti means against. So they're telling you with the drug names, they're going against you, not with you. So instead of going with the self-healing doctor that's built inside of you to heal you, medical science is going against you, and that's your side effects. So side effects are direct effects. They're not side, they're direct from the wrong chemistry. So they cannot tell these MDs in med school. Can you imagine a professor looking at a 20-year-old kid who wants to be an MD, sitting in med school and looking in his eyes and saying, hey, docs, up and coming, every one of your patients that you see as a doctor are due to chemical toxicities and chemical insufficiencies to the cells. They'd be going, wait a minute, professor, you're telling me that the cells are malfunctioning on chemical exposures and insufficient water, insufficient protein and insufficient vitamins and insufficient minerals and insufficient enzymes and insufficient antioxidants? If that's the case, professor, what about all our drugs? They're all chemically orientated, so they all cause illness. Hey, doc, what about our chemotherapy? That's mustard gas we used in World War I to kill the soldiers. Hey, professor, what about our radiation that we all know caused cancer to treat cancer? What about our medial contrast dyes to get images? So their finger would point to their own profession, and they can't have that. So the reason why truth cannot be taught in med school, in academia, is because the truth is going to be pointing their finger at them, that they're the culprit of their treatments. Even their pathology, their pathetic pathology, and we'll get into what a proper pathology is, they cause illness. MRIs, CT scans, PET scans, X-rays are radiation. Even the blood work and urine and saliva, they're poking you so they can risk infection. The scopings, they can cut into and perforate. So everything they use as a pathology or as treatment can cause illness. Everyone knows that if you run chemotherapy long enough or radiation long enough in the blood, you're going to risk leukemia and other cancers on top of the one you have. So the very things they use for treatment are carcinogenic, and they tell you that right on the package. If you look at a chemo agent, the word mustergen is mustard gas. They're admitting that the derivatives of these chemo agents are coming from Germany under Hitler's war camp. So the research involved in chemotherapy and radiation has nothing to do with science. It's what pays the best, not what works the best. It's what pays the best by big pharma and drug companies. So I want everyone to know, as far as the listeners are concerned, what they're going for treatment, if you are, you're risking other diseases called side effects. So side effects are a disease. Pharmaceuticals are a disease. If you take a pharmaceutical orally or injection and you take them and you also factor in immune system weakness, number one. So everyone knows that all pharmaceuticals wipe out the immune system. And everyone should know that the immune system is the only system that you have to keep yourself from opportunistic infections in the future and protect yourself from cancer. And yet they wipe that system out immediately from their treatments. A lot of the diagnostics they use, because of the medial contrast dyes they use, will wipe out your immune system also. So the very thing that you have as protection against bacterial forms and viruses and cancer cells, they're wiping out with their treatments. Number two, everyone knows that every pharmaceutical has side effects. It really is direct effects, but they call them side effects. And those side effects will manifest as other illnesses to the point where they'll cause other problems. And they love that because they hit you on the front end with one disease, and then they give you two or three drugs. Those drugs antagonize each other and cause more side effects. And now you're on six drugs. Then the six drugs antagonize each other. And now you got two more side effects. Now you're on eight. So the average person starts with one or two problems. By the time they end up with them, with their surgeries and botched up antibiotic therapies and botched up closing up as far as their surgical procedures causing blood sepsis or not having the proper hygiene, and they end up dying of sepsis or blood toxemia when they get home, on and on it goes. And I'm going to do a whole show on even the side effects of hospital treatment. So as everyone knows, it is all cellular, because that's what the makeup is, the nuts and bolts or the bricks and mortar, the scaffolding of a human. So then you treat the cell and you reverse the disease process, but only by stimulating your own self-healing systems. So there's no drug that can cure you. There's no vitamin. There's no herb. There's no mineral. There's no panacea. There's no magical multivitamin. There is nothing in the natural realm, including pharmaceutical, that can heal anything. It's stimulating your own self-healing autogenic system that's built inside of you, like a broken arm or a cut in the finger. So the broken arm and the cut in the finger is not from the cast put on your arm, and the laceration in your arm, if you get like a knife wound, is not healed by a Band-Aid. So it's the nutrients you take in, the calcium, the proteins, the water, the oxygen, the building blocks from nutrient compounds that you're taking in will actually form the scab and form the mending of the cut. It's not the cast that heals the broken bone, and it's not the Band-Aid that heals the cut. I want you to know that everything is autogenic self-healing as long as you let it. So if you don't take in any nutrients and you rub dirt in your cut, guess what? That cut will never mend, never. If you don't have the calcium and the proteins and the nutrient building blocks at the cell site, and if you have dirt and soil and rubbed in the cut, that would prevent the cut from healing. So you can prevent the healing at bone level. You could prevent the healing at DNA level. You can prevent the healing at tissue level. You could prevent healing at skin level, even at the emotional level and spiritual level. As we're triune beings, we're made of spirit. We have a soul that lives in a temple body matrix. The only thing we can see, though, with the human eye is our flesh. So the physical flesh is an illusion. That's, we can only see it by sunlight, photon light. And the invisible soul realm, which everyone knows, anger and bitterness and resentment and hatred and unforgiveness and so forth, are the toxic emotions that manifest ulcers or manifest tumors. So the physical tumor or the physical ulcer that you're going to get is due to the unseen emotional realm. And there's no blood work, there's no CAT scans, there's no MRIs, no PET scanning that can detect anger, that can detect bitterness or resentment or hatred. So the unseen forces of spirit and soul are superior or stronger than the physical body. That is not even taught in med school. Think about it. All they're taught is what they can see, smell, touch, and feel, and the five senses. And everyone knows on this listening circuit that if they knew how the human body runs, that the spirit and the soul are involved also. So they're running on three cylinders as far as knowledge is concerned, just in the beginning, let alone not even having the knowledge of what disease is. Now, I tell the audience the reason why they can't tell them the simplicity of what causes illness is the doctors, as sharp as they are, would get it. They'd say, wait a minute, chemical assaults that we're injecting and eating and breathing and bathing in and putting in our skin, rubbing in our scalp, and putting shampoos and conditioners and hairsprays and underarm deodorants and skin creams, and they leach into the blood along with what we eat and drink and inject. If these compounding toxicities are causing DNA damage at the cell level, then why are we using pharmaceuticals? They're all chemical. Why would we be using chemotherapy, which is mustard gas, we used in World War I to kill the soldiers, as a treatment for cancer? We're using things that cause cancer to treat cancer? Come on. We're using radiation, which causes cancer, to treat cancer. Don't even make sense. Now, it makes sense to them because they make trillions of dollars on the treatment by getting you sick and sicker and hit you on the back end with procedures and more drugs from the side effects that they cause. So it's a perpetual money game is what it is. There is no science at Harvard or Baylor or Stanford or Loma Linda or Dartmouth or any of the medical universities. There is no science. There's only conjecture of building economy or economics, and we're going to get into what those are too. So the episodes that we're going to be doing, the series of the What in the Cell is Going On, will continue for weeks, and we're going to show the audience that want to know truth, what true science is, and what false pseudoscience is, which represents the atheistic Harvard and Baylor and Stanford, and they're based on evolution. And I call it evolution, not evolution. because as everyone sharp on this listener, as a listener, would know that the human body is created, it's not evolved through primordial soup or from some monkey. And if you believe that, I got some swampland to sell you in Arizona, because you can even go into the womb, if you will, the birthing room called the womb, and you can shatter evolution just by the explanation of we come from a sperm cell and an egg cell. When you conceive a sperm and an egg, these are two living cells, you get what's called a zygote. And the zygote has a template that can manufacture 100 trillion cells if it wants to, but then it decides to split and divide and copy itself and make two embryonic stem cells, then make four embryonic stem cells, then make 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256. It exponentially doubles. At about 2 weeks, you're going to get a billion embryonic stem cells. Now, this is interesting. Every one of these stem cells have the template to make a whole human body, but they decide, I'm a stomach cell, and another one says, oh, I'm a liver cell, oh, I'm a kidney cell, I'm a brain cell. How do these cells know what they are? How do these cells know how to crack off and differentiate and form organs with no tumors or mutations? And they know when to stop. When the brain is not synthesized to the third month of gestation. So the intelligence of the zygote and the splitting and dividing of organ systems goes on for 3 months before the brain can even tell them what to do. So what is telling these cells, you're a stomach cell, you're a liver cell, you're a kidney cell, you're a brain cell, tell them how they're forming the organs and when to stop when there is no physical brain until the third month. And all you have to do is sit down with Huxley and sit down with a Darwinist and show that to them, and you can get an evolutionist. And I'm sure many of you on this line, as far as listening, are evolutionists, and you just haven't been explained properly the creation factors of the human body. I'll touch base on just a few of them. A runny nose is intelligence. It's not a disease. Now, medical science, because they're evolutionists, would have to say a runny nose of mucus is a disease, and you stop it up with antimucoids. Well, I would say it's intelligence of purging. The body's trying to get rid of an allergen or try to get rid of bacteria or virus, and they produce sticky mucus to trap the pathogens to blow the nose. Now, I would say that's intelligence, but medical science is that's a disease. I would say that diarrhea is a flush of a toilet because you swallowed something like salmonella. You had some salmonella in your salmon, and your body's just trying to get rid of that pathogen so it doesn't hurt you. So that's intelligence of purging to keep you alive. Now, they say diarrhea severe is a disease. I would say that a fever that is running 102, 103, 104 would actually be healthy because you allow the fever to go to burn up the viruses and bacteria and create an immune response. When a certain temperature is reached in the body, the body's bone marrow says, I need to produce white blood cells and spit them out and fight this fake flu or this yellow jacket fever that you have. And it migrates eventually to a pathogen, and the white blood cells swallow up the pathogen like a Pac-Man. That immune response due to the heat, due to the fever, is intelligence. It's not a disease. And I could go on for an hour and a half, 2 hours, to show the audience that everything the human body does is intelligence. It's not a disease. It's a purging mechanism to clear your throat with mucus, to cough up mucus from your lungs, to have a runny nose, runny ears, diarrhea, fever, vomiting, anything that's an outlet, whether it be through the nose or the ears or the mouth, is a purging system to detoxify you. And we're going to do a whole show eventually on detoxification of how you do that. And so the body's trying to detoxify you because you're not. So it's saying, hey, you're not urinating, you're not defecating, you're not sweating. You're not moving your lungs or pumping the lymphatic system through exercise. So it says, I'll do it for you. So it'll kick in its own purging mechanisms to compensate for what you're not doing. That's why that happens. So if all disease is at cellular level, then you do natural alternative treatments to feed the cell, to stimulate that self-healing doctor that's inside of you. And we're going to get into eventually some episodes where we'll cover more ground I want this to be more of an introduction to kind of what I want to do and what I want to teach you. That number one, there's only one disease, and it's repackaged 20,000 different ways. And number two, that there's many multifaceted factors that run the cell, not one, or not two, or not three. Another science that runs the cell, we talked about molecular biology, and the second subject would be cell physiology. Third would be alkalizing the pH, so pH science. Fourth would be nutritional biochemistry. Another science would be what's called quantum physics or quantum mechanics. And the quantum realm is the subatomic, sub-meaning below. And this is the unseen force that's the information transfer back and forth to tell the cells speed up, slow down, make a hormone, make a neurotransmitter. So these cells communicate like a fiber optic phone system. So picture this in your head, 100 trillion cells all firing messages, similar to everyone picking up a phone on this planet, 7 billion people, and making a phone call. So picture 7 billion conversations going on. And then picture everyone hitting three-way, where everyone has three-way conversation of every cell. And then picture everyone hitting conference call, where every phone, 7 billion of them, have the capability of 1,000 conversations, and then times that by 15,000. And that's how many cell-to-cell combinations that you can have as far as phone conversations, cellular phone conversations of information transfer that make the body move, that make the body run, make the body walk, even sleeping, all 100 trillion cells are firing. You know, it's autonomic, you don't know it, but every cell fires a message 24/7. But what makes the cell malfunction or makes the cell function properly is like night and day. So as we talked about, and Renee talked about that last week, the vaccinations are the major culprit because of the genetic DNA that's altered, and that's a hybrid coming from monkeys or horse or foreign antigen from insects and from all these embryonic tissues that you're using for what's called serial passenger
The vaccines do the underlying, what he's trying to say is the vaccines are the underlying culprit of all diseases. And then what you eat, breathe, and drink on top of it, Gary's saying clearly, add to it. And eventually there's a payday. And of course, the medical doctors are trained by the drug companies. So they slap a label on that, you know, cellular malfunction. And they have lots of drugs and treatment, to mask the symptom of that cellular malfunction. So hopefully we've made it pretty clear to you what's going on here. We travel the world with our message, what in the cell is going on, teaching people, again, my message last week, how the vaccines are the underlying cause and how we've just been totally just brainwashed to believe they're the best thing since sliced bread, and it's so not true. And then, of course, you know, my husband comes behind me with the biggest premise of Western medicine, vaccines, as well as, penicillin and everything else, that germs cause disease. And that's the whole premise of all that. And he showed clearly that it's the underlying condition, the cellular terrain, not the germs causing the disease. How strong is your immune system when you're exposed to something? If you have a vibrant immune system, it can't take hold. Whereas if you have a compromised immune system, vaccines, of course, compromising it the most, not just within 3 hours of birth, but we're talking about during pregnancy, they're vaccinating now. Even generational vaccine damage. I mean, we've been vaccinating since the late 1700s. So, all the heavy metals as well as the animal viruses they use to weaken the diseases to make the vaccinations, it's going to cause havoc on the immune system. So that's it for today. Hopefully we've enlightened people and made you understand the simplicity of the body's innate ability, and this will be continuing many more shows. We'll probably have a different guest on next week, and we just thank everybody. We thank Progressive Radio Network for allowing us to be able to share this truth. Our number is 800-939-8227. That's Vic Fellowship, Vaccine Information Coalition, and our website is vacinfo.org. So that's V as in Victor, A-C-I-N-F as in Frank, O.org. Thank you for listening.